This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Julian Ng. Islamic banking is gaining more prominence not only in Malaysia but around the world. How does a small financial institution get in on the game in a very competitive environment? Today on The Breakfast Grill, we have Rajate Maimuna, CEO of Hong Leong Islamic Bank. Rajate, good morning. Hong Leong Islamic is one of the smaller guys on the block, and your branding is not normally associated to Islamic banking. In fact, 50% of your parent bank, Hong Leong Bank, customers are non-Muslim. So how do you strategize in a market like this?
Hi, Julian. Firstly, I'd like to say that my customers are also 50% non-Muslim. But I think that is... That makes us a poster child, actually, within the Islamic finance industry to showcase that Islamic banking is not just for the Muslims, it is really for all. We are not terribly small within the Islamic fraternity, but not terribly big either. It is a lot about, of course, service and differentiation. So my focus has been a lot more on providing technology solutions to my wholesale customers and digital banking to our retail customers.
And we'll be talking about that in a bit. Also, the fact that Hong Leong Bank and Hong Leong Islamic, I believe, is also very specialized in the SME sector. Is that transfer from your conventional SME customers to Islamic?
Actually, not quite. My parent bank has a large SME base. I have actually, to many people who don't know, a fairly good client base of government agencies.
Really?
Yes.
With Hong Leong Islamic?
Yes, Hong Leong Islamic specifically. We provide... payment solutions in more ways than one. So a number of these government agencies actually use our payment solutions, our cash management solutions, which other people haven't, you know, thought of, bespoke solutions to these customers. So that's very unique to us and not to the parent bank.
And what makes these government institutions come to you instead of, let's say, the names that would pop up in my head would be, let's say, Bank Islam or Bank Muamalat. What makes Hong Leong Islamic stand out among the government institutions?
Well, the thing is, they don't come to us. We go to them. Because we're not a GLC bank, and it's, you know, it's not natural for them to come and bank with us. So we go to them and we go to them with specific solutions that makes us different from the rest, I guess. You know, when things don't come to you so easily, you really got to think out of the box a little bit more. And so you look at pockets of things that other people don't do. And because the country is moving towards cashlessness, mm-hmm. and that's where we come in.
On The Breakfast Grill today is Rajate Maimuna, CEO of Hong Leong Islamic Bank. We're asking how Hong Leong Islamic survives in a very competitive Islamic banking landscape. And if you have any comments or questions, please text us at 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Rajate, when I look at the Islamic banking assets, I was surprised to learn that the relative smallness of CIMB Islamic at 55 billion ringgit, CIMB is way behind Maybank's 160 billion in assets, of course. But banks like Hong Leong Islamic and Public Islamic are surprisingly just 10 to 20 billion just behind CIMB. How do you explain this situation? Because banks like Maybank and CIMB are so far ahead in the banking world.
For Hong Leong as a brand, the Islamic arm is very important to us to reach out to the Malay market. So I can't quite comment why CIMB's Islamic banking assets are not a lot bigger than what you expect it to be. But maybe because CIMB as a brand is generally more neutral to all Malaysians, whereas we've seen to be a little bit more inclined to the Malaysian Chinese market. So for us, it is important, and it's a conscious effort for us to actually grow the Islamic arm so that we can also reach out to the Malay market, to the government market, and not just to traditionally the old, you know, Chinese business SMEs or the, you know, middle-aged Chinese, Malaysian Chinese.
Yeah, but how do you think this situation will play out? Because everyone is trying to make their mark in the Islamic banking world. What are the qualities you think an Islamic bank would need to be a winner in that space?
Really today, before anything else, is the customer experience. I truly believe that. And you really have to provide that kind of customer experience. And secondly, as an Islamic bank, your entire Sharia governance is absolutely critical, and that we have invested heavily, you know. And providing services or products, when you talk about retail products, honestly, everybody kind of offers the same thing. Mm-hmm. So really, services at the end of the day, the major differentiating factor. And the other thing would be, in today's world, would be digitization.
Mm. Are you worried about competition? Because not only among the local players in the Islamic space, but I guess the foreigners are also trying to get in on a game, not only locally, but globally. I mean, London issued their first Sukuk a few years ago, and they themselves, along with the likes of Dubai, Hong Kong and Singapore, are trying to become Islamic financial centers as well. So are you worried about local competition and foreign competition?
Well, actually, to the contrary, I really want as many players in the industry. For this industry to become a global one, we need to have a lot more. Today, we have about $2 trillion worth of assets globally. $2 trillion is half of that of ICBC's assets. We're nowhere near big yet. So I welcome more people within this space.
And what are the targets for Hong Leong Islamic itself? What is that critical mass that you have to achieve to have enough assets, enough customers before it becomes a kind of economies of scale?
I think at this point in time, we have kind of crossed that, because when I first came on board, we contributed to about 5-6% of total banking group. Now we're between 18, we're already at 15-18%. So 20% is a relatively good contribution for a subsidiary to contribute significantly to the group. So
if we take Maybank as some kind of a milestone with you know, almost 200 billion ringgit in Islamic assets, do you want to rank yourself somewhere along that line?
Maybank is very different in terms of DNA also, because they have adopted some kind of Islamic first policy as a group. We're very different from a DNA perspective as well. So I think I look at 20% as being a generally good contributor to a group as a business. So we have other subsidiaries of equal size, and that makes us, in my view, as a shareholder, I would see us as being relatively significant.
And also, one of the problems of Islamic banking products is the standardization of definitions of deals and products and so on, because many people have different interpretations of what the Sharia law means to their products. How far are we in solving this problem? Because I understand you have a role to play in this. You are a member of many international organizations as far as Islamic banking affairs are concerned.
In Malaysia, I think we've come a very, very long way, to the point that our contracts are rather prescriptive these days. It's actually embedded as part of the rules of the central bank. So we're pretty much harmonized in Malaysia. But globally, there are different views, but the difference is actually literally below 5%. 95% of the time, we're kind of agreeable on most things. And that 5% is good. I think 5% of different views is good, because it provides innovation, and you really need, because different jurisdiction would have different application. You must allow for those differences. So I don't think it's a problem.
And Rajate, you were previously the COO of Digital Innovation and Transactional Banking at the Hong Leong Islamic Bank, your current employer. What can you tell us about how digital and mobile is driving the Islamic banking industry?
I think it's very important for Islamic banks to embrace digitization, largely because we're small. And we don't have the same kind of the branch network or the reach like conventional banks do. And so the only way for us to go out and get to people is actually through digital means. And even if I, for instance, Hong Leong Bank is 100 years old, and I'm 10 years old, and they've got close to 300 branches, and I've got, you know, close to 10. The thing is, even if I had that kind of time, do I want to grow it brick and mortar? So I don't. So today, to get to people, the fastest way is actually through digital means.
So this allows you to become very lean and mean without going into the traditional route of branch banking.
Yeah.
And how is that working out? Are people comfortable about dealing through their phones and through their computers?
Well, the Gen Y generally are. Older people will take a little bit more coaxing. But we're seeing a very encouraging number of migration. But we do have resistance for the Gen X's and the baby boomers. But for Gen Y, it is completely the other way around. They don't want to walk into your branch. Mm-hmm. They don't want to see people, and they want instant gratification. So they want to transfer money. They never, almost never go to any counter. So it is us preparing for the future of Hong Leong Islamic as a whole, and also providing for, you know, today.
Yeah. And of course, when we talk about digital, we can't avoid talking about fintech, which is such a buzzword these days. I'm just wondering if Hong Leong Islamic is caught in the middle, because you have the big boys, you know, the Maybanks and CIMBs of the world. And then on the other side, you got the P2Ps of the fintech world. Do you think that you would be able to survive in this game?
I think yes, because it's not about size. When you talk about fintech, it's about agility. And sometimes the bigger you are, it may work against you because you can't, you know, make decisions so quickly. You cannot adapt to changes as quickly, which is why you see the fintechs rising. They're small. They're out of garages. So what we do is I work with fintechs, collaborate with fintechs. We actually rolled out the country's first P2P mobile payment and the country's first customer-to-business mobile payment using mobile phone as a payment terminal. And yeah, we built that all in-house.
So the game plan of these P2P startups really is to displace the banks, right? How do you, that's the stated intention, but the banks can get in on the games as far as platforms are concerned as well. Are you worried that P2P will actually cannibalize traditional banking business?
There are two things I feel very strongly about is I feel that the rise of these fintechs is actually good for consumers as a whole. Otherwise, we will never change. We will never change the way we do things. We probably expect you to walk into our branch for the next 100 years. But then suddenly these people come and say, look, you can do things this way, which is easier. It forces us to think differently and behave differently. I'm not terribly worried because I feel that we are responding, at least as a group. Innovation is part of our DNA. So it's like, okay, we have to evolve. But I worry for the industry as a whole, because banks tend to think that this is their birthright, that this is my area, is regulated, and therefore I'm protected. And so I don't really have to do, you know, very much. I worry if the industry don't respond, because these fintechs are not out to displace banks as an entire institution. You won't have one major fintech displacing a financial institution, but what they'll do is they'll cut off the little parts of your business, the profitable bits of the business. You know, it's called death by a thousand cuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you don't think there would be a kind of Uberization of the whole banking industry where, the likes of Uber and Grab are displacing the taxis in the same way that P2P really wants to cut out the middleman and lender wants to lend directly to borrower? And there's something inherently Islamic about that, right? It's quite ethical to arguably cut out the middle person.
Well, from that perspective, it's very true. The fintechs can actually kill the banks if the banks don't respond. But the nature of fintechs is they're small. So you have fintech A probably going after remittance, fintech B going after lending, fintech C doing something else. you don't have them coming together yet. They may, I don't know, maybe 10 fintechs come together and become a fintech kind of a bank. We don't know. But that threat is real. I agree with you, and which is why I feel that if the industry don't wake up, they may, you know, end up being irrelevant. Mm-hmm. We are very conscious of that threat.
What about that very lucrative rice bowl again of the SME business? Because P2P lending is all about small amounts lending to one another, but SMEs want to borrow in the region of tens of millions or even hundreds of millions. Do you think that fintech can disrupt that space?
Maybe eventually, but that's again... a lot of that is dependent on the regulations of a particular country as well. But so I think, you know, big amounts of those kind of money would still come through the banking system, but not necessarily through the banking book. It could go through the capital markets, which is also not part of the banking system per se, you know, not part of the banking book.
Yeah.
So when you look at what the fintechs are doing, is a small version of what the capital markets are doing. Isn't that P2P as well? Investor, issuer coming together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And recently in May, the new Bank Negara governor, Dato' Mohamed Ibrahim, he introduced the investment account platform, which is a platform that's funded by a number of banks, about 150 million ringgit in seed money. And these banks, among them are Afin Holdings, Bank Islam Malaysia, Bank Muamalat. How come Hong Leong Islamic did not participate in this?
We're working on our internal approving authorities for that. Yeah, we are very keen. It is a concept that we're very keen on because it actually provides Islamic banks a way to raise funding without increasing our capital and balance sheet. So that's part of... Islamic contract under the contract of Musharaka Mudaraba that actually allows you to do profit or risk sharing. So before the laws came into place, we weren't allowed to do such a thing. So the laws have actually provided Islamic banks to do something different than the conventional banks. So this investment account is only accorded to Islamic banks under the Islamic Financial Services Act. So we should be coming on board pretty soon, I heard.
And of course, within there are vast resources within the Hong Leong Group. Are the group resources going to fund some of these ventures that Hong Leong Islamic is interested in?
Well, the bank and the financial group is a regulated entity. So some of the things that we do is still within the ambit of permissibility. But within the bigger group, you know, anything and everything is possible.
We're speaking to Rajateh Maimuna, CEO of Hong Leong Islamic Bank, on the survival of Hong Leong Islamic Bank in this space. Rajateh, you have very many different roles in the world of Islamic banking and Islamic finance. And I think in one interview you mentioned that if the world stuck to Islamic products, then the global financial crisis can be avoided. Now, there is a lot of volatility that's being driven by exotic derivatives. Can the world do without derivatives?
The Sharia principles actually allow for derivatives, but for the purpose it had been intended to be from our forefathers, which is to mitigate risks and to square a position. What you have today is that people take those derivatives, detach them from the mother contract, and then trade on them. So when you trade these derivatives, what are you doing? It's actually gambling. So the world needs derivatives products for mitigation purposes, but we should ban naked trading of derivatives. And that's what Sharia principles prohibit. So had the world adopted Sharia banking, you wouldn't have these naked trades of derivatives or packaging of products which have no tangible value. And that's how we got into trouble, or the West got into trouble.
But the detractors would argue that, you know, this is needed for liquidity and this is needed for the financial world to go around. Would you be comfortable in a world where, you know, 80 to 90% of derivatives, which is gambling, as you put it, are eliminated?
Of course, because what is funding for, Julian, really? It's meant to enhance economic activity. It's supposed to support real trade. But you have global GDP, and then you have the number of derivatives traded globally is 10 times that of global GDP. So when you take GDP as an indicator of real economy, what is that worth of 10 times more that you're trading on? That liquidity, as you mentioned, hadn't come back into the real economy. It's useless. It's made a couple of people rich, but it hadn't come through the real economy.
And of course, the growth of Islamic financial products is part of that whole ethical investing movement. But for many, I think it comes down to dollars and cents. The pool of returns and cost savings is sometimes too hard to ignore. So is there concrete evidence that Islamic outperforms conventional?
From a return perspective, this is a very interesting topic. You see, in the world of banking, it has always been about the concept of risk transfer, which means it's about a concept of credit. I lend you a dollar and then you give me back a dollar and 10 cents. Under Islamic laws, you can actually participate in the businesses. So Sharia-compliant banking allows you to actually participate in the business, which means that for an investor, I should be able to get equity returns. So if you look at interest rates today, what are you getting back? You put money in a bank, say you get about 4%, 3 to 4%, right? But if you look at the stock market and you just look at the general returns, people are making double-digit returns, and yet you're not participating. So yes, for an investor who comes through the Islamic banking route, the opportunity to make more is there.
And on that note, we actually got a question from tweet by someone named Heil Bain. This person asked, do you think Islamic banking products are nothing more than a relabeled conventional product?
People ask that of us all the time. The reason why it looks very similar is because we designed it that way so that the consumers are not confused. Historically, you've always known a house loan to be a house loan, a car loan to be a car loan. So what we've done is to also allow the design of an Islamic mortgage to look very similar on the outside, but behind it are all the various contracts that will satisfy Sharia, so as not to intimidate you. Otherwise, it'd be too complex for you to understand. And for you, I want to buy a house. This is the amount of money I can pay every month. And please tell me whether I can do it Islamically. And so we've painstakingly done it in such a way so that it looks similar. But fundamentally, it's very different. But we need a whole other hour to explain how those contracts work.
And we have just 1 minute left. And you are, I believe, an advisor to the World Islamic Economic Forum. Tell us what plans does the WIEF have for the Islamic banking world?
Well, WIEF is in its 12th year now. And our role is largely to go and promote Islamic economies around the world. And to promote Islamic economies, you have to provide funding. So that's part of what WIEF is about, is to facilitate governments who want to embrace Islamic finance to facilitate trade through Islamic funding.
Thank you so much for your time. And that was Rajate Maimuna, CEO of Hong Leong Islamic Bank, joining us on The Breakfast Grill today. I'm Julian Ng, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.